This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Public Radio's favorite family doc, Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? Here is the number to call. It's toll-free, 1-800-462-7413. Good time right now to give us a call. Zorba, along with the listeners, some interesting research always to talk
private
about.
Private gyms for teens and young adults. Following that Curbs model, will this be successful? What is it? And how do you get your
interesting
kid to go
into concept? Gyms for teens and young adults only.
And young adults only. No older adults allowed. And what is it? What does it do for our kids? And medical illiteracy. What is that? And does that cause early death in people who should be living
this
a long, sweet life?
Physician illiteracy or patient illiteracy?
Yes, the answer is yes. That's okay. Right. You got it. That the answer
both
is
coming
yes.
Up.
Both. Absolutely.
We have our medical myth buster. What's our recipe?
Garlic kale with turkey bacon. Now, doesn't that sound exotic to you?
That sounds unusual.
Well, it is. Hey, you've got your bacon, right? Your turkey bacon, obviously healthier.
I actually don't know whether I like kale or not, but I will find out because Adam is going to make some for us. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help you?
Well, I'm a longtime soccer player all through junior high, high school, and even college. And I still do it now out of college.
How old are you now?
25.
Okay.
And basically my problem is with shin splints. Mm-hmm. And it's been a pretty much debilitating, I guess, if you want to call it that. Later on in the season, the beginning of the season usually starts out pretty smooth and everything's okay. But as I run more and more and more, then it just starts to wear pretty thin. You know, I live off of ibuprofen and aspirin and whatnot.
At 25, you aren't ready to give it up.
No, not yet,
Yes, yeah, soccer is a great sport. We'll see what Beckham does to the sport, whether or not it mainstreams it to American consciousness. I have four kids, and I think I counted once, and I went to 10 million soccer games.
And then stop counting.
I stopped counting at 10 million. That's exactly what it was. That certainly is what it felt like. But shin splints, they are a major issue and a major problem. And they're because if you look at your leg and the way your leg is, most of the muscle is in the back of the leg. And in the front of the leg, you've got a relatively flat muscle that has lots of insertions essentially into the bone. And it's really the way the muscle is pulling at the bone that causes this. What do you wear? I mean, you wear the shin protectors, but there's nothing else that you wear on your legs at all.
Sometimes I have taped the back of my calf muscles, actually. I heard a friend of mine in soccer tell me to try that.
Yeah, I've got a good suggestion right along that. A couple of things, first of all. I mean, you know, here it is. You know, you don't want to take an anti-inflammatory unless you need it, but when I go skiing, I take an anti-inflammatory because otherwise I ache, and I take Aleve, cheap, inexpensive. It's longer acting than ibuprofen, and I take a couple of Aleve tablets, you know, before, and it's a 12-hour pill, so I can take it in the morning the day I go skiing, and I know it's going to be there when I'm going down the hill. So using an anti-inflammatory, if you know you're going to have pain, is great, and use it before the pain rather than after the pain, and you can take Tylenol afterwards if you need it, but taking Aleve before the pain can make a big difference because it'll chemically reduce the inflammation around the area before it gets inflamed from the running, that pulling, that twisting that goes along with soccer. But mechanically, what I think you ought to try is a support stocking. And the first kind I would do is I would go to your local drugstore and I would buy the most expensive support stocking they have. And usually they're far, far better. And what they do is they're elastic and they will push on the muscle. So the muscle will not tend to pull away as much from the bone. That's what's occurring. And so it's a mechanical way. And you've done that partially by taping, you know, the muscles in the back of the knee. I'd go for a full support stocking. Ace wrap would also work, but a support stocking will work better. And that may do it. And the third step after that is doing some stretching exercises, you know, before the game can give you a little bit. But I'll tell you, support stockings, dynamite, they may reduce your pain by 50%. They may not get rid of it, but they may reduce it by 50%. So. That's what I would try. What position do you play?
Midfield.
Midfield.
Defense, for the most part, but midfield.
Do you get kicked a lot as an adult soccer player?
Yeah, depending on what team we're playing, but yeah.
Depending on what team you're playing. You mean some teams play dirtier than other teams?
No, definitely.
Have you ever...
Even as adults, they do that?
Have you ever headbutted anybody?
Unfortunately, yes.
The truth
naughty,
test.
Naughty,
the
naughty.
Truth test, though. He's telling us the truth. Well, thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. To West Lafayette, Indiana, we go now. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show.
We appreciate the call. What's up?
Well, I'm 55. I'm an avid volleyball player, and I've been told by my orthopedist that I have advanced arthritis in my right knee. Mm. And I haven't been able to play regularly for about a year. And I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions about what might get me back on the court.
Sure, I've got a whole bunch of suggestions. First of all, if we look at your arthritis, which is the arthritis you get when you're older, and by the way, arthritis occurs in all animals, from dinosaurs to insects. Everybody gets arthritis, seriously.
We really know that dinosaurs got arthritis?
Yeah, because they have the bones, and they can see arthritic changes
sure
in dinosaur
enough.
Bones.
Yeah.
Tyrannosaurus Rex, why was he so angry? It was his knee. It was his knee. He needed a joint replacement, and there were no humans around. That's why he was angry like that. But getting back to your arthritis, what happens when you go out on the court and play volleyball?
Well, I don't, in part because I weigh more than I used to. I don't have the vertical that I had because of that, but I also, the outside, is the ligament on the outside is sore, and it prevents me from doing a lot of the lateral stuff I used to be able to do.
Do you wear a brace or an elastic bandage, anything like that?
Yes, as part when we first discovered this, we got a what's called an unloader brace.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's a special type of brace.
Yeah, and it straightened up the knee apparently, but it keeps me from jumping the way I'd like to jump, and so I use that for a while, and lately when I play, I just put on a sleeve brace that has a couple of metal.
Okay.
Strips in it.
Sleeve braces, which help. Couple of suggestions. First of all, you're doing some good stuff. Let's talk about what you're doing right and what you have to do. So wearing that sleeve, that makes a difference. And then the problem is, after that, you may still have pain. And so you've got to say, okay, what do I do before I go to that knee replacement? Because, you know, that's kind of the end. That's the last thing.
What about exercises or warm-ups beforehand?
Well, it's weight loss, as you say, very important, makes a difference. That's really tough, but it's part of that. But a 10-pound weight loss will make a difference. And Tom brings up the exercise. It's the stationary bike exercise that makes the biggest difference.
Okay.
So a stationary bike like a Schwinnerdyne, or you get the thing that goes on your regular bike in the basement that gives you some resistance, that makes the difference because you build up your quads. Mm-hmm. And when you build up your quads, you unload some of the issues that occur in your knee. And those are the things I would do. So I would do the quad sets, which you can learn from the net. You go up to the net and you do quad set, mm-hmm. and you can now pull down some dynamite videos for nothing to see how to do this exercise called mm-hmm. quad set. We'll put that on our website, zorbapastor.org.
Great.
We'll connect it on the website to give you a couple of good videos for that. And then, you know, those are the things to do. And if you do the weight loss, the quad sets, a stationary bicycle, you might be able to get through. You can continue to do this.
Okay. What about these? I've been reading about chicken cartilage injections.
Well, there are. I'll tell you, and that was the other thing. It is actually chicken cartilage. It's actually rooster comb injections called Synvisc, and that was the final thing I was going to talk about.
Okay.
And that's instead of a steroid injection to the knee, and you get three of those injections. They don't label it as rooster comb injections, but that's basically what they are, and they are another form of anti-inflammatory that is safer than a steroid injection. Some people, about 50% of the people can get a 60 to 80% reduction, not a total, in pain in their knee. And sometimes they get a booster injection every 6 months. The injections are not painful, and they do work in a lot of people. And it's called Synvis, covered by most insurance. And that's the other thing. That's
great.
The final thing. So.
Thank you, Matt.
This is not a joke, rooster comb injection.
No, it's not a joke. And I don't know how they actually found it, but it's actually derived from rooster comb, the coxcomb, the little thing on the top of the rooster. It's an injection that reduces inflammation in the knee, can be very effective, and can put off the need for surgery by up to 8 to 10 years.
Okay, we've helped a soccer player.
Yes, we have.
We've helped a volleyball player.
Yes, we have.
Let's help the teens now. You mentioned there's a new kind of, not fad, but thing going on in the country, gyms for teens.
Well, yeah, and we have to look at the issue of curves. Curves has become a very interesting phenomenon. Started about, 10, 15 years ago, they developed an idea that women who are often older, who are often overweight, who don't exercise, we can develop a program where you go to a gym, it's only you, it's a series of stations, and we can tailor make an activity for you. It's not overly expensive, it's doable, and it's something for your
gender
body.
Gender specific, and now we have teams.
Absolutely, versus the usual gym, what do you get? I mean, when I think of a gym, and I've gone to gyms in my life, there's the 20-somethings, or they're older men and older women, and often they're women who are fit. I mean, most of the gyms I've gone to in my life are mostly filled with fit people. And if I'm an unfit person, an overweight person, what am I going to do? And it's the same with teens. What if you're a skinny teen? And let's remember that 10% of teenagers to 15% call themselves skinny and underweight.
As you and I were when we were teens.
Absolutely. I wanted to bulk up. And there was, I'm still a thin guy. But when I was a teenager, there was nowhere I could go at all because the gyms were filled with guys who were muscular and I didn't want to be around them.
Yeah.
So I never went to them. Yeah. Or you're overweight. And what do you do? Well, this is a new concept where you have a gym that has floor trainers that actually help you. They're often, it's defined for kids who are overweight, who are young, they're teenagers, and they have these facilities that include things like video games to help you engage in your activity.
Well, not kids sitting watching video.
Yeah, games. No. It's video games where you may be on, these there are squares that where you dance and where you're doing aerobic activity and you're watching a video game. So you're doing the video game with your body, not with your thumb or your finger, but with your legs, the biggest muscle that is essentially in your body. Or you have rock climbing, obviously more oriented for teens than adults. I mean, who as an adult would go rock climbing?
Well, it's always been a kind of a dream of mine, but I've never done it.
Wait a second. We know there are adults with rock climbing things. Why don't you go rock climbing?
I should. I mean, I don't. There's no reason why.
I think it would be a fun thing to do. And you talk.
Of course, maybe I don't because I might die.
Yeah. They have safe ways of doing it. They put a little net underneath there. But these, getting back to the teens, these teen gyms are a great concept because what is the biggest public health problem we have in our society among teenagers today?
Obesity.
Right. Right. It has doubled in the last decade, roughly decade and a half. Yeah. And we know that kids who are obese don't exercise. And we know that kids who exercise are less likely to be obese. And so we've got to figure out a way of doing this.
These things are just getting started, I assume.
Yeah, but it's
a
great
idea. I
don't
think we have one here in our
community. No. We don't have one in Madison. But now, you can look at the monthly fee, for these things and say, I can't afford
it.
Well, that was where it was in California. Right. California, it's $59. Hey, in Wisconsin, what'll it be?
$19.95.
That's exactly what I was thinking. $19.95 in Wisconsin, $59 in San Francisco. Way to go, baby.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. On we go to St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
I have this skin condition. It's currently on my left hand. It's between two of my fingers. And it looks like little tiny blisters, and it really itches,
and kind of burns a
little bit.
Have you been outside working or playing in the leaves lately?
No.
No.
So unfortunately.
You're not a gardener.
No.
No.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday you'll be a gardener. So we have a potential gardener.
When I go rock climbing, you'll be a gardener.
When Tom goes rock climbing, you're going to start gardening. And when I go to the gym, that's it. You'll be rock climbing, I'm going to the gym. And you're gardening. You're gardening. Welcome to the dream show. But getting back to the issue at hand, how long have you had it?
I've had had it a few different times over the years. I don't remember the last time I had it, and it usually just kind of goes away after a while.
More in the winter, more in the summer, any particular time that you've noticed?
No. I mean, I've only had it a handful of times, no pun intended, but it went away, and it came back, and I'll just put lotion or something on it to soothe it. And I've tried hydrocortisone cream, and that doesn't work.
Over-the-counter hydrocortisone
cream.
Okay,
yes.
That's very, very weak, to let you know. It works for some things, but it's extremely weak. Dryness in your hands that you've noticed at all?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Dryness in the hands. How are your nails? Do they break?
They can be a little bit brittle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not all the time, but yes, they can be.
Okay. Do you wash dishes?
Yes.
Okay. With dishwashing soap? Yes, and you don't wear gloves?
No.
Ah, got a good answer for you.
Oh.
Wear gloves. That's number one. Number one most important thing. Dishwashing detergent is awful on the hands. Think about it. It's getting the grease off the dishes. It's got a lot of suds, so we aesthetically like it. Maybe they put a little perfume in it. But the fact is, just like it gets it off the dishes, it also affects the nails and the hands, and it dries them out. And what you have is most likely
dish
a dry... That's what you have, dishpan hands. That's exactly it. Dishpan hands, use this soap. The fact is, this is not the, use my soap. You won't get it.
Are hands better?
But the her hands are more beautiful. They're gorgeous. Remember the commercials?
Oh, sure.
You know who's the daughter's hands were my hands? Come on, those are professional models. But you can wear rubber gloves. And the fact is, you will then be protecting your hands. You will be protecting your nails, your skin, the palm of your hands, the rest of your hands, rubber gloves, dynamite for this. That may be all that you need. And if that fails, what you need is to call your doc, get a steroid cream that is stronger, and during the times that it flares, you put on the steroid cream and then you quit.
Okay.
And frankly, hydrocortisone cream works.
Too
it's
weak.
Really, really weak. You need something that's a moderate potency cream, a drug such as Kenalog. That's the name brand, but it comes in a generic, really cheap Kenalog, K-E-N-A-L-O-G. And these are steroid creams. And we'll list a couple of steroid creams on the website.
Okay.
So that we can list it. So when you go to your doc, you can go in and give some suggestions. We'll give the generic name. We'll give the usual price because it's cheap, and we'll give you a few suggestion. And I think, by the way, that's important. When you go into your doctor, if you need have something like this, bring in all the information you have. And just like you get information from the net, you get it from the radio, you bring in that information, and that is going to lead to better patient care when you read about information and learn about it. You know, and you're a public radio listener, so of course you understand that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Zorba, let's go to our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a question from Eric in Providence, Utah. Eric is a fan of the show and even likes our theme music. Leo and Ben will be happy about that. Eric writes, my eyeglasses have two tiny but powerful magnets implanted in the bridge, which is convenient for attaching sunglasses. But I wonder if there's any downside to having magnets directly in front of my frontal lobes all day.
Oh, my goodness. That is really, there's this whole...
But my sunglasses have magnets on the sunglass part.
On the sunglass.
And they attach...
Oh, yeah, look at you.
To the regular.
Is that you, Tom? I can't recognize you. You got sunglasses
I'm cool,
on.
Don't I, with these sunglasses?
You are so cool. You are so hip.
But, I mean, I've never seen them where they have the magnet on
obviously,
them.
Obviously,
is there any danger to that?
Well, first of all, it's fascinating because magnets, as you know, are a huge issue around the country. You can go to the website and you can buy magnets for your in order to get rid of backaches and magnets to get rid of plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
So magnets are used in a positive way. So here the question is this going to affect my brain, my frontal lobe, and my personality? There is no evidence that really magnets do anything of a negative way to your body. And I cannot imagine medically where a magnet would actually affect you. Now, if you had a radioactive sunglass that would glow in the dark, luminescent sunglasses, that would be a different issue. But no, I think magnets are totally safe. And put on those sunglasses again. I just want to see how they look. And magnets are great. Ah, perfect. You see, wear your sunglasses and people will respect you more than ever before.
All right.
But yes, magnets, okay.
There's no downside to having Zorba Pastor on your health in front of your face or in your ears all day, so keep those emails coming. Just send them along to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have lots more coming up. Our recipe is next, and then more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster coming up later, and of course, some more research here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. So, if you'd like to talk with Zorba, if you have a question about health, fitness, nutrition, give that number a call, 800-462-7413. And we will be back to the phones after our recipe, which begins now.
I'm waiting for the introduction. I didn't want to bust in and just kind of. And you were doing so well.
A little overly dramatic,
that's
maybe.
Right, that's right.
All right.
That's right. Okay. Garlic kale with turkey bacon.
Now, this is not something that you're going to wake up in the middle of the night saying, if only I could have garlic kale with turkey bacon.
Bacon today.
Yeah.
That's what I really want.
Yeah.
Honey, what's for dinner?
Yeah.
Garlic kale. But that's because kale is not something we actually think about. If we go to Northern Europe, kale is big. I mean, we're talking about huge. You go to places like Portugal, it's used often in a soup called Cayo Verde, which is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And my son married a lovely woman from Brazil. We were just in Brazil. Feijoada, which is a very traditional Brazilian dish, is made with beans and often meat and kale. If you go to Germany, Northern Germany, you go on, there are kale tours in the middle of January.
Yeah.
In the Netherlands, they have Bruinkool, which is this fabulous kale dish. Kale is big in Europe and in Brazil.
This is a little more information about kale than I need.
It's on the test,
Tom. Keep it coming?
It's on the test. Well, let's talk about it. I am going to keep it coming. If we look at dark green leafy vegetables, they turn out to be extremely important because they're loaded with vitamins, minerals, flavonoids, carotenoids, the things that we lack when we talk about five servings of fruits and veggies. It's the dark green ones, which are not iceberg lettuce, that are important because it has folic acid, it has K, it has a vitamin C in it. It's wonderful stuff. It's great. And we just don't use it.
And during our short pause a couple of minutes ago, Adam came in with this bunch of stuff, which I assume is kale.
Here, wait, listen.
Why do we want to listen?
That's the sound of kale.
Why do we want to listen to
the sound of kale?
This is kale sitting here.
That's kale.
Oh, you're trying it now before you do the recipe?
It's delicious. And it actually, if you put it in your freezer and you expose it to frost for a little while, you don't do it a deep freeze, but you freeze it a bit. You can deep freeze it also, and it comes back. It's actually sweeter. How'd you like? Here, take some.
Well, usually we wait until after the recipe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's okay. What do you think?
I think this must not have been frozen because it doesn't taste
very
that good to me.
I probably had
this stuff in a salad along with some
other greens.
Well,
you have that
in
the salad, and it's in this, and it's not expensive.
But it's sort of like, I mean, it's like...
No, you add things to it. When it's used in dishes, you add it to it. But let me ask you a question. When you eat greens and you dress a green that you're eating like a salad, do you consider salads to always be
No, I like salads.
Right. So this is something we can use in salad.
But as you say, there's stuff in there. There are tomatoes and onions.
But this can be frozen. So you can add this to dishes in the house. And what you're adding is it's a way to begin to add... a very important micronutrients to your diet, and that's our idea.
I mean, after you freeze it, it'll taste good, you said.
It will taste better.
Even better. All right.
But if we look at this recipe, garlic kale with turkey bacon, start out with 2 pounds of kale. That's roughly about 4 bunches.
Okay.
And you take off the stems.
About 4 bunches of kale.
That's right. Take off the stems. 10 slices of turkey bacon.
10 slices of turkey bacon.
That's right. Now, when you look at turkey bacon in the store, read the label. And the reason is some turkey bacon has more fat than others, and you can get a lower fat turkey bacon. It's often made with dark meat that has more fat, but you can get the lower turkey bacon. Once again, we're always looking at ways of getting rid of fat in our diet. One tablespoonful of olive oil.
A big tea of olive oil.
Right. 4 cloves of garlic chopped.
4 cloves of garlic
chopped. A cup of fresh mushrooms sliced. Now, I know you like mushrooms, right?
Not that much, but I eat
I like my medium
zucchini. Love mushrooms.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah. I love them. I grow them. I grow shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah.
I have to tell a story. I had somebody from Spain, and I showed him the mushrooms that I was growing on these logs that we grow in the back of our yard. And I walked and I showed him these mushrooms, and I said, "Look at these mushrooms." And he looked at me, and he looked, and he said, "Magic mushrooms?"
And were they?
I said, "No, they're shiitake mushrooms.
Oh, okay.
Magic mushrooms, please."
All right.
One medium. But he did. He really said that. One medium zucchini slice.
A medium zucchini slice.
1.5 cups of water.
A cup and a half of water.
Salt and pepper to taste.
S&P to taste.
You haven't stopped laughing at those mushroom. Okay. Coarsely chop the kale. Okay. Coarsely chop. Cook the bacon in a heavy pot over medium heat until crisp. You can, of course, microwave it either way.
Yeah.
Remove the bacon from the pot or the microwave pan. Drain it on a paper towel. Get off as much oil and grease as you can. It does make a difference when you towel that off. Then add olive oil to the pot. Reduce the heat to medium-low. Sauté the garlic, mushrooms, and zucchini until the garlic is a nice golden brown. That's going to be about a minute or so under medium heat. Add the kale and stir, stirring often until the kale has wilted and it turns actually a brighter green.
Oh.
Once again, that's about a minute. Add the water now, simmer for 5 minutes, season with salt and pepper, and then when you're done, toss it with the bacon.
Yeah, you could throw some other veggies in there,
absolutely,
too, if you wanted to.
You could put in water chestnuts if you wanted to.
Put
an onion in there. You could even put tomato in there afterwards if you don't want to cook the tomato.
Yeah.
Right, a little red onion would look kind of nice for this.
Yeah.
But I think the nice thing about it is that we're using kale, which for us is a green that we don't use much, common in Europe, and it's a cheap, inexpensive, flavorful, delicious, highly nutrient green.
And thanks for all that exciting information.
Thank you. The calories,
thank you.
Kudos. Calories, 175 calories, 6 grams of fat, not much fat at all. 20% of the fiber you need for the day, 20% of the protein you need for the day. It's 20%. So it's actually a high protein, high fiber dish.
We are happy to send this recipe to you. Address your request to Zorba Pastor on your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53706. Don't forget to enclose a self-addressed, stamped, business-sized envelope so we can send the recipe to you.
And you can come to our website at zorbapastor.org. We've got wonderful recipes on there, other recipes that are archived, and don't forget to sign up for our weekly podcast.
Don't forget, our most important part of the program is your phone calls, 800-462-7413. A listener now in Bristol, Virginia. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I'm calling because my nephew, who was diagnosed with Crohn's disease last year, is now 18 and was recently hospitalized because of major pain that he was having and losing weight again. It seems that he kept it under control, I guess, with diet and everything, but... So that's when I started wondering what I could do, and I heard your program and thought about calling you.
Oh, we're sorry about the Crohn's. See if Zorba can help you out.
So he's had Crohn's since he was what age?
Well, he was just diagnosed last summer, so summer of 06. Mm-hmm.
When he's in the hospital, is he in for a few days? Is that what's been happening?
Actually, he's been in for a while now.
Oh, so he really has some serious Crohn's that's there. Tell me a little bit about, he's not had any problems before that. Does it run in his family at all?
Not that we know of. Certainly not on my side of the family. There's nothing. But on the other side, I haven't heard of anything.
Crohn's really is a, it can be a very, very difficult disease. Often presenting, it's an autoimmune. It's thought to be, it's an inflammatory bowel disease. That's what it is. So you've got inflammation of the bowel. Often you need large doses of steroids to be able to bring it under control. Tough, you know, steroids are a mixed blessing. They really work when you need them, and they can have side effects to it. And then it's really a lifelong change in what you eat for diet, and then other medications that also reduce the inflammation that don't have the side effect of steroids. But for somebody that age, the side that is often neglected, I think the side that it sounds like you're really concerned about are the psychological aspects of a young adult having a chronic disease.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
You know, that's the issue. Does he have a girlfriend?
Not that I know of. He has several friends, and he's preparing to move about 10 hours north to go to a community college.
So he's going to move 10 hours north. Does he have other buddies that he's moving north with?
Yes, and that's the big deal, is he's really looking forward to that, but it's so involved, you know, what's happening with him.
Also, 10 hours is really far away.
It is.
I mean, you're in Bristol, Tennessee. Where's he moving to?
He actually lives in Florida.
So he lives in Florida.
She's in Bristol, Virginia.
I'm sorry, Bristol, Virginia. I'm sorry. Well, I didn't mean Bristol, Tennessee. There's a Bristol,
Tennessee. That's all right. We're right on the border.
Right. On the border.
They are the same.
They're the same. Oh,
yeah,
I see.
State Street, the main street goes right through the
middle. Oh, you know, I've been there, and I didn't realize that.
The Bristol, Virginia is much nicer than Bristol, Tennessee.
Of course.
Well, I have a couple of suggestions with chronic disease. First of all, he's got to have good physicians who know a lot about inflammatory bowel disease. I assume that. So let me make that for an instance as an assumption. You need a good relationship with your doctor, with your gastroenterologist who treats a lot of this, who you trust as the patient, the kid, and who the adult trusts. And if you don't have a physician, a team that you're happy with, which is a nutritionist and a physician, then you need to get one. So step number one is the parents. Are they happy with that? Because to be in the hospital for long periods of time, you got to like the doc, the hospital, and everybody around it. Mm-hmm. Because chances are he's going to be hospitalized again.
Well, that's one of my big questions. Is my brother's a single parent down there, and the mother lives in New Orleans. And in fact, I was wondering.
And I say, meaning. So what's your flag up? Have you met? Tell me about your brother.
Well, he's a single parent and working all the time, just working constantly. He's a landscaped, he owns his own nursery.
Okay.
And so he's constantly on the road, and just so that's another big
concern. So you've actually really talked about the other issues that surround this chronic disease, the psychosocial issues. The mom is in New Orleans, the dad is in Florida, the kid is moving 10 hours away, the dad is working all the time, the mom is distant. You know, he's going to fall between the cracks. Or
right,
he is,
and I've
you know.
Heard stress adds to this.
No doubt about
it's
it.
Like, how do you get rid of this?
100% issue, and you've got a young adult. Well, you get rid of it by, you have to start somewhere. You have to have an action plan. So first of all, I would get on the phone, talk to the child. Sometimes, you know, taking a visit and going and eyeballing the son and eyeballing the doctor, going with him to see his physician will give you an idea of what you're dealing with. If you have the energy and time to help, going there and physically looking, huge difference.
Yeah, I'm actually going down there this week. I'm actually going to visit.
Oh, good.
So.
You know what I would say? If he's going to have a visit with the doctor during that time, you ought to go to the visit with the doctor. If you eyeball the doctor or if you can talk to the doctor on the phone, you'll get an idea of what his care is like, because you may have a certain amount of health literacy where you understand things, for instance, the dad may not or doesn't have the time or the inclination, whatever, to do it. And second of all, when you go down there, what you're telling your nephew is, I'm here for you. Let me help you with this. I can also help. I'm another person to talk about. Maybe, you know, you've got a relationship with your mom. You've got one with your dad. I'm going to help you, too, with this. And we're going to fight this together, because it's a chronic fight. That's what it is. You're not going to cure it. We don't have a cure for Crohn's, but we can fight it. And that means he can talk to you. He can talk to you about the stresses. And he can talk to you about, gee, I don't want to, you know, I've got this pain. I don't want to go to the doctor. They may put me in the hospital. The issue with Crohn's is during a flare, the quicker you treat it, the faster the recovery. And for a young adult, they often will put it off because they've got a dance on Friday night and they've got a test due, and they may ignore the symptoms for 2 or 3 days when, in fact, they have to jump in with some strong therapy, and that actually keeps the symptoms from worsening. So you can be his advocate, and that is going to help his disease.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Zorba, let's take a minute to ease a listener's mind now. Anne from West Lafayette, Indiana, was chatting with her doc about the benefits of olive oil. He told her that once olive oil is heated, it loses its nutritional value. She wants to know if this is true.
Well, this is a very interesting issue that now has been going on recently, where if you heat olive oil, which is a monounsaturated fat, to a certain temperature, which actually is not heated. It's heated to about, I think it's 350 or 450.
So
I don't remember.
Superheated.
Yeah, superheated. Yeah. Whether or not it loses the monounsaturated benefits of olive oil. Well, first of all, we have to look at where we have the data for the benefits of olive oil, and it really comes from the Mediterranean Sea, where people consume lots of olive oil and essentially have less heart disease. And they also use olive oil in their recipes. I mean, they use it, they heat it up in their recipes. They don't necessarily heat it up to a super hot degree, but they certainly heat it up, and they still have less heart disease and stroke than we do. So I'm on with this argument on the side of use olive oil in traditional recipes, and it gives you the benefits. Now, if you use olive oil in a wok, in a Chinese recipe, right, and you put it super hot and super high, you do, from what I've read, break some of the bonds, and you may lose some of the nutritional value of the olive oil. But it's not bad for you. You just may lose some of that nutritional value. And so I think that it's okay to heat up olive oil, because we know from the population studies that olive oil is good for the heart.
Okay.
So That's my spin on this question.
And Zorba Pastor on Your Health is always a benefit, no matter if it's hot or cold. So add to the show with your email. Just send it to
Zorba@WPR.org.
You know, we still have this kale sitting here. I was thinking, if we got a pot and
kale, I mean, we will
it's
eat
kind
it.
Of pretty.
That's right. It's pretty. And you can use it as a bouquet. I'm holding it as a bouquet right now.
Anyway, more of your calls coming up. And we have some research. Don't forget, our medical myth buster is yet to come also here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that number is 800-462-7413. And we will be getting back to the phones after we talk a bit about medical illiteracy.
Right. Now, you know, we obviously know what illiteracy is when it comes to reading, but medical literacy is really having trouble understanding information, you know, processing information, you know, remembering the information, you know, when you leave the doctor, has to do with whether or not you understood what the doctor was saying in the first place.
And you said early in the hour that we're talking both about doctor illiteracy and patient
illiteracy. Oh, absolutely. Doctor illiteracy, because doctors don't know what the patients are actually hearing when they talk to them. And I mean, so they can't read the patient. And medical literacy from the patient point of view is they don't understand the instructions. And the estimation, which is really a good faith estimation, is that 30% of the patients who visit a doctor's office do not understand what they're supposed to do when they leave the doctor's office.
How do they come up with this?
Well, they ask patients. They do it through a series. This particular study was a very interesting study, and they looked at literally about 3,000 adults, went in, saw the doctor, got information. Maybe they had heart disease or asthma or a chronic problem. When they came out, they questioned them, you know, about how they understood it. They filled out a questionnaire, and roughly one-third didn't know. And I'll give you a good example, and it's not just an age issue. When I first started practice, I had a young woman, recurrent urinary tract infections. I tried everything, and I finally said, I'm going to give you this pill. Take you know, one pill twice a day, and you know, I want you to take it for a month, and we'll try to get rid of this. And so she came back a month later. She still had it, and I said, let me know how you take your pills, because I didn't write every 12 hours. And she said, well, I take the pill in the morning, and then a half an hour later, I take the second pill.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, why do you do that? She said, well, otherwise I might forget. So in her mind, twice a day meant one at 8 o'clock and one at 8:30.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why
yeah.
I wasn't working. Yeah. She was yeah. never taking any of her medication correctly. And this is a big problem.
The study shows that people actually die because they don't
understand. The study was interesting. The study followed people for years. And what the study said was there was a 30 to 40% are medically illiterate. And when they looked at the death rates over a period of time, and this included things like appointment slips and prepare for an x-ray and so on, there was roughly a 50% increase in death rate of people who are medically illiterate.
50%?
50. You know, 50% of the people they think may have died over about a four-year period.
And because I find they didn't understand the direction?
Well, I find that hard to believe, but that's what it showed. Archives of Internal Medicine, Dynamite Study. We'll have it on our resource page for anyone who wants to read it.
What should doctors do?
Ask questions. You ask a question to a patient, and then you say, let me explain it again. How are you going to take the pills? Do it in a nice, controlled way to find out if they're actually hearing what you said and processing it. Give them information, and if they don't understand it, try to make them understand it.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener, is with us now in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I was calling because I have been drinking a tea lately called kombucha, and I was wondering if you'd heard of it. Have you heard of kombucha?
No, I have not heard of kombucha, but tell me what's in it.
Well, it's a drink, and it's a handmade Chinese tea, and it has some active bacteria, and so it's a culture, too. And when you drink it, you're supposed to get a lot of benefits from the probiotics in it, and it also contains vitamin B and folic acid.
Okay.
And so it seems to be kind of all the rage. It seems to be flying off the shelves. People are learning how to make it themselves. And I just wanted to know whether the benefits are real or if it's something that's kind of just out there.
There are a couple of things that, concern me now, and they concern me specifically about Chinese herbs. I am very, very concerned about the safety of Chinese medicines and Chinese herbs. And the more that comes out, the more concerned I get. We know, for instance, that there are some Chinese herbs that have heavy lead and heavy metals. These are not tested by the FDA. Big issue, not a small issue. We know that food sources have been tainted by Chinese herbs. And so I have to tell you, at this particular time, I don't buy Chinese herbs and teas. I'm staying away from them until the federal government gets a handle on it and we begin testing this so that we know we're actually getting the herb. So that's my take on it. And I'm of the idea primum non nocera, which was basically a Hippocratic term, although that's Latin, which is first do no harm. And the first thing I look at for these are what harm does it do? Most herbs, if you look at things, I was thinking about this the other day, a lot of supplements, a lot of herbs, they're a fad. They come in, they stay for a while, and they leave. And I was thinking about St. John's wort, how everybody was taking St. John's wort. Yeah. It was big. It was to take, stop the Prozac, which some people need and some don't. You don't have to go to therapy. Take St. John's wort. You'll be happy. How much do you hear about St. John's wort these days? Hear much about it?
Not much.
Not much.
No, not much. And remember, it was big. It was the rage. Yeah. I could have bought stock in St. John's wort. We hear about echinacea every year during the cold season because it's sort of topical. Ginkgo. Remember how big ginkgo was? Yeah. Big. Take ginkgo. Good for the brain. Good for the mind. These things fly off the shelf for a while, which is okay. Some are good. Glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, example of a good thing that we know actually has benefit. I don't like Chinese herbs. So my take is I worry about them unless they're from a reputable, reliable company. I'm not going to put it in my mouth. So.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, let's get to our medical mythbuster now. We have a listener myth today, and it comes to us from Cheryl in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Cheryl's myth deals with pepper, but not with sneezing. She says that she used to hear her great-grandparents use the phrase, "Pepper helps a man to his horse and a woman to her grave."
Man to a sore
does
spot. Well, I don't
does
have,
pepper does pepper affect men and women differently? You remember that old phrase?
Yeah, helps a man to a horse and a woman to a grave. My mother, my grandfather from Poland said that all the time, and my mother always we didn't own a horse.
Is there any difference in the effects of pepper on men and women?
That is a total myth that pepper affects a man differently than a woman. Obviously, it's saying, you know, helps a man have energy and it'll kill a woman sooner. And it's interesting because pepper has long been something that's been used in Ayurvedic medicine and all over different sorts of medicine in India. It's been used for constipation and diarrhea and earaches and gangrene and heart disease and indigestion, insect bites, anything that could be used, pepper, you know, has been used for. And there's no current medical evidence, because this is complementary medicine. There's no scientific study that shows that pepper will help any of these things at all. But on the other hand, we, in medicine, had our own myth that pepper caused ulcers, that pepper actually caused...
Oh, yeah, I remember
you remember that?
Yeah,
pepper caused ulcers,
yeah.
and it caused GI bleeding, and it caused you to vomit, to have heart disease. We know that that's a myth.
Right.
Pepper doesn't do that at all. You know, and then we had people on a bland diet because it would actually help their intestine, and the fact is that's a myth.
I mean,
you may not like pepper, but it has nothing to do with your intestine.
I die without pepper. I put pepper on,
you know,
just about everything.
Pepper is something we love. Enjoy and anything that we love and we love when we enjoy.
Yeah.
We have different groups of people saying it's good and bad. You have the Puritans on one side saying if you enjoy it, it must be bad for your body. And then we have the hedonists and the Epicureans on the other side saying if it's good, you should take it into
your body. But it's hard to understand why someone would come up with the thought that pepper would affect men differently than women.
That's just weird. Well, that's what we call myth.
Do you have a myth for Zorba? We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
That number again is 800-462-7413. And a Boise, Idaho listener joins us now. Hi.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have a question for Judge Zorba, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I've been having a little ongoing debate with my girlfriend about hiccups. And she thinks that they're kind of just a natural process, which I guess they are in a way, but she'll just let them basically run their course.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, it's kind of uncomfortable, and I don't really like them, so I'm able to stop them fairly quickly by holding my breath. And so I was just wondering, are they okay? Should we stop them? What should we do about hiccups?
You know, hiccups are basically an irritation of a nerve. It's the phrenic nerve that kind of runs around the stomach, by the stomach. Little babies, you know, whenever you see little babies, they always seem to have, whoop, those little hiccups, you know, and they always look cute in little babies because they kind of are, they have a hiccup and they look funny. And in adults, we clearly don't like it. And certain things will often bring up hiccups. My wife, Penny, loves hot food. I mean, she puts pepper on everything, but pepper isn't hot enough. She'll have jalapenos and other hot, spicy food. And as soon as she has hot, spicy food, her eyes often tear, she sweats, and she gets hiccups. And so she loves it. But it's associated with the food, and then she'll stop eating for a few minutes until basically she can get rid of the hiccups. Holding your breath, great way to stop hiccups, of course. There are lots of other ways. But it's not bad for you to have hiccups. It's just uncomfortable. And frankly, there's some people with hiccups that don't stop. And
they go on for like weeks. Sometimes.
They go on for weeks. And those people we sometimes had to put on medication to stop their hiccups. Now, so she hiccups all of the time?
No, it's just kind of here and there. It just kind of pops up. Usually, actually, when we're eating, she likes spicy food, as do I. So we both experience hiccups when we're eating something hot, either Thai food or whatever else, Mexican or whatever. But she'll actually stop eating and she'll sit there for a few minutes or 5 minutes and just kind of let them go. And whenever I do it, I just stop them right away.
You stop them right away. Well, the reality is she stops and takes the time. And so if you're eating hot and spicy food, this allows you to eat in the more European way of relaxing and enjoying the food. It's more of the slow food movement versus the fast food movement. Yeah. And so here it is. You're on one side where I'll just hold my breath and stop the hiccups and keep on eating. And she's on the other side. But that's what makes good food. And obviously, you're not about to give up your hot, spicy food in order to not have hiccups, so.
No, definitely not.
Well, enjoy the spice and enjoy the difference between the two of you in stopping those hiccups.
And thank you so much. Thanks a lot for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Zorba, you've noticed that I've lifted this cardboard box up to the table.
Right.
You have no idea what's in it.
I have no idea. Well, that is the black box.
No, it's actually a brown.
Brown box, yes.
You remember a recent show, you were talking about, I think, a speaking engagement, and after that, you got some honey from people that were your fans.
Yes, I did.
Well, just yesterday, I opened our front door, and this box was in front of the front door. Addressed to my name, address.
Okay,
no postage on it, so somebody in the neighborhood apparently, or somebody came to the neighborhood.
Random person, maybe a dog or a person.
My wife said, I hope it's not a bomb. Which it isn't. It wasn't. And here's what was in the box.
Oh, look at this honey.
A honey bear.
From Blanchardville. Oh, how gorgeous by Baldwin Apiaries.
Number one honey.
Number one honey. Now, number one white honey.
And this note was in there. And I was hoping you'd be willing to read the note and try to put some sincerity in it. This is the note to me from the person that gave me. It was nice enough to give me this honey.
I promise. I will put sincerity. Yes. And it says on the front, it's got the X's sort of like kisses.
X's and O's. Kisses, hugs, and
Tom, the only reason Zorba gets more honey from his fans is that your fans don't want you to get any sweeter. It's very sweet. But just to remind you how much we all love you, here's some Wisconsin number one from our number one, your loyal fans. For our number one.
Your loyal what?
Fans. Your loyal fans.
That means I have two.
That's really nice.
I have two because it's plural, right?
Yes, your loyal fans.
I have two fans.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, how sweet is that?
And you're going to give me the honey
back. Yeah, I'm giving you the honey back.
Thank you very much, whoever you are, anonymous, plural, fans. Thank you. Zorba, thank you very much.
A pleasure, Tom.
For all things Zorba, including our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
And don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.